The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the special insert headline, Peak 25. They have reached the top of their companies and organizations, and they have a lot to say. And that special section has another headline, Peak 25. They recently reached the apex at their organizations. 25 of them offer their views from the top. We'll read the first one and then come back to read more if we have time in the end. The first one is Janet Cowell, CEO, Dick's Park Conservancy. You went to an Ivy League school, and yet after a few years in Indonesia, Hong Kong, and New York working as market analyst, you chose to run for public office, Raleigh City Council, some 20 years ago. Why? I've spent several years living in places with no or weak democracy, China, Hong Kong, Indonesia, and been witness to anti-democratic crackdowns like those in Tiananmen Square and East Timor. I wanted to live in a community where I could voice my opinion and be part of the decision-making process. I'm drawn to the public issues and problem-solving. Tell us something about the future Dick's Park plans that most TBJ readers may not know. The Rocky Branch Creek runs through Dick's Park. Like many urban creeks, it has been abused, channelized into a narrow gully. Our plan is to make the creek the waterfront the city of Raleigh has never had, broaden the creek bed to allow its natural meander, and rewild it by planting native species on its banks. It will be a welcoming space where you can dip your toes in the creek and sit and listen to the sounds of the burbling brook. Given your broad experience across several sectors, what has been the most satisfying job in your career? Raleigh City Council. The impact on people's lives was tangible and enduring, and there was an intimacy with the community. That's one of the reasons I wanted to work for Dick's Park Conservancy. When you plant a tree, build a playground, or clean up a creek, you have immediate, positive, tangible impact on people's lives and the planet. Dinner for four, including you. Who are the other three guests and why? Tim Sweeney, CEO of Epic Games. I'm interested in how to incorporate gaming technology into parks and appreciate his efforts at land conservation. Nilda Costco, author of Well-Being by Nature, Therapeutic Gardens for Children, expert who helped design Gibson Play Plaza at Dick's Park and director of programs at the Natural Learning Initiative at NC State University. She's a friend and we've been meaning to get together, so why not remind her in the newspaper? Kofi Boone, landscape architect and NCSU professor. I admire his work, but haven't met him yet. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Effort sees positive results. A collaboration between an Outer Banks businessman and an NC State University professor designed to find ways to support the tourism industry is making progress. Whitney Nolenberg, who teaches at NC State's College of Natural Resources, spent the summer of 2021 on the Outer Banks, helped by a fund launched by Clark Twitty, the president of the Twitty & Company rental agency. Nolenberg visited with a wide variety of stakeholders, and while she praises the tourism industry for being resilient, she notes that finding housing for workers is a challenge. She's now looking at similar destinations, such as ski resorts and Hawaii, to see how those areas support workers. As Nolenberg points out, with fewer members of the tourism workforce but more guests, it is vital that employers recognize the value of their employees, as they're the ones who will be delivering the service and experiences that influence whether guests share positive experiences about their time in North Carolina or whether they choose to return. Also a key concern, making sure the rise in tourism doesn't have a negative impact on the Outer Banks environment. Twitty notes he is thrilled with the effort so far. Sutton's finds new revenue stream. The owner of Sutton's Drug Store in Chapel Hill has found a clever way to add revenue. Rent the store for events. Sutton's, a quaint place that dates to 1923, is packed with photos of UNC Chapel Hill students and where students and alumni love to congregate for burgers and banter. Sutton's had been a pharmacy for years, but that closed in 2014 after CVS opened on Franklin Street. Don Penny bought the store in 2014 from John Woodard, who had owned it since 1977, and noted that he had to find ways to replace that revenue from the pharmacy. Penny started renting the space in 2015 and is now renting it about 80 times a year. On the night UNC played football at Duke University, for example, Sutton's opened its doors at 8 p.m. for a sorority event as students and parents watched the Tar Heel game on big screens set up around Sutton's. "This just happened to work well for us," Penny says. Doggy daycare in expansion mode. A Durham group is looking to capitalize on the rising interest in daycare for dogs. Go Dog, founded by the father and son team of Jess and Ben Ebert, has three locations so far and is looking for more growth after a $20 million investment from Level 5 Capital Partners of Atlanta, which targets high-end lifestyle brands. "We weren't going after a big investment," Ben Ebert says. "We just got approached by them, and the more we got to learn about Level 5 Capital, the more we loved their strategy." The idea is that rather than being a standard kennel where a dog spends most of the time in a cage, a pet owner can drop the dog off at Go Dog and know their pet is getting extensive care and playtime. And the market isn't just people going out of town, but also busy workers who don't want to leave their dog cooped up while they work. "It's a great benefit for the pet parent because they don't have to feel guilty about leaving the pet at home all day," Ebert says. Recruiting efforts beefed up. Moore County Partners in Progress, the county's economic development arm, is creating a new position aimed at attracting new businesses and fostering expansions of existing companies in the community. The business development director will report to Executive Director Natalie Hawkins. The organization is accepting applications for the position through November 15. Moore County has come a long way from its reputation of being solely a hub for retirees and golfers. The county is attracting new investments for home builders and commercial developers, especially in the Pinehurst, Southern Pines, Aberdeen, micropolitan area. The county will also soon be host to Golf House Pinehurst, a new office complex for the United States Golf Association that will also be home to the World Golf Hall of Fame. New leader named for Apex Company. Apex Instruments has a new leader now that founder William H. Howe has announced his retirement after launching the firm in 1988. The Fuquay Varina Company, which has 38 employees, has named Miles Wright as the new CEO. "I am confident that under the guidance and leadership of Miles, Apex will continue to manufacture leading-edge equipment," Howe says. Howe, meanwhile, isn't headed out to pasture. He plans to start Merge Scientific, which will manufacture glassware focused on laboratory markets. And finally, market finally starts to cool. As mortgage rates reach 7%, signs are becoming more clear that the Triangle housing market is slowing down along with the national trend. In Wake County, homes sat on the market for an average of 22 days in September, up from just 7 days in June, according to data from Triangle Multiple Listing Services. For Durham, the figure was 21 days in September, jumping from 10 in June. Prices continue to cool off as well. Across the region, the median sale price in September was $402,000, down about 5% from June, but still up about 20% for the year. And now we turn to the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity. The headline, Future-Proofing Real Estate, Managed EV Charging, How Bryn Huddleston of Greenbridge says owners of commercial properties can electrify their assets and control costs. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges relating to environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, issues. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world of corporate responsibilities. Property owners are looking at their parking areas with fresh perspectives. This is ground zero for future-proofing real estate assets. If you think a handful of EV charging units on your property will meet demand, think again, think exponentially. The roughly 2.8 million passenger cars on U.S. roads today that are either full battery electrics or plug-in hybrids is expected to grow to more than 15 million by 2025. And by 2030, they'll number over 44 million, according to McKinsey & Company. While most EV owners will be charging at home, augmenting that charge will happen across the miles. Employees, customers, and business partners that are spending a couple of hours or more at a property will expect to be able to top off their charge in the parking lot, typically with a level 2 charger. This is not an ominous "what do we do" moment. This is opportunity knocking. It's an opportunity that is fueled by the confluence of rising demand and investment incentives made available through the Inflation Reduction Act. The IRA changes the narrative from risk mitigation to one where property owners have the opportunity to capture the upside and control their own energy future. And energy is going to be arguably the most important input for most businesses going forward, says Bernd Huddleston, co-founder and CEO of Greenbridge. He references an article in The Atlantic built from a Credit Suisse report that also concluded IRA spending will come close to $800 billion, significantly higher than the previously estimated $374 billion. How to leverage those opportunities and how to efficiently manage the charging infrastructure so that it doesn't adversely impact utility costs are questions most property owners are grappling with, particularly those in the middle market. Greenbridge, which launched in March 2021, is helping businesses in the commercial and industrial segment prioritize, model, develop, and finance renewable projects. Customers run the gamut from private equity companies and REITs or REITs to universities and municipalities. It's everything from digging into their asset list to determine the best place to start to understanding what they're trying to achieve from a tax perspective and from an ESG perspective, he says. Because the IRA tax credits are transferable, it makes it easier for small and mid-sized businesses to take advantage of the money on the table. We are democratizing the access of tax credits to the broader market, Huddleston says. Before, these tax credits funneled up to the top banks and corporations in the country. The transferability has created an opportunity for us to work with regional or local companies or even high net worth individuals that want to offset their federal tax liability. It's leveled the investment field so that family-owned businesses with 10 or 20 assets can benefit in the same way the large private equity partners with hundreds of assets benefit. We help them make sense of what they have, prioritize and identify opportunities within their portfolio, and structure financing, he says. The bigger challenge is managing the deployment of power. EV chargers are typically interconnected through the host building as charging usage increases, it can negatively impact utility costs charged to that host building. It takes the form of a demand charge, and as the utility manages the highest peak at any time, it resets what the utility has to be prepared to provide, Huddleston explains. As more people are charging in the parking lot, that number may creep up and create unforeseen cost for the host. Greenbridge builds the EV charging infrastructure to ensure that demand charges don't exceed the threshold set by the host building. That's what managed charging is. The control system changes the rate of charge so vehicles plugged into the chargers don't bust through the defined level. Whenever feasible, Greenbridge deploys net zero charging via solar installations that push renewable generated electrons through the charger. Sometimes there are limitations as to how much solar we can put on a site, but the goal is to drive as much renewable generation to those chargers as possible, and the end goal is to have every electron green, Huddleston says. The way this really scales in a state like North Carolina is through collaboration with the utility. It's not in trying to be competition to the utility, he says. Global energy research firm Wood Mackenzie has predicted impacts from IRA investment will reverberate worldwide, and investment in renewables will surpass $1.2 trillion between now and 2035. Chris Siepel, vice chairman of Energy Transition, Power and Renewables at Wood Mackenzie, stated, "The act will spark a boom in decarbonization technologies over the next 10 years. And the biggest uptick is expected in solar additions, which are projected to increase 67% in the coming 10 years over what was anticipated to occur without the IRA incentives. Greenbridge has a number of solar and EV charging projects underway in distribution centers and some smaller projects for nonprofits and schools that are primarily solar-only projects. We have proposals out to North Carolina universities to provide solar, and we're in this interesting discussion to provide charging for micro-mobility transportation on college campuses, which is gaining a lot of traction and going to be splashing in the next 4 to 6 months," Huddleston says. And now we turn to some of the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. First one, written by Evan Hoopfer. VinFast moves closer to construction on Chatham plant. VinFast is ramping up in Chatham County as it nears construction of its massive electrical vehicle plant. The company is about 35% done with site work at Triangle Innovation Point, said Brooke Taylor, VinFast Vice President of Government Relations and Strategic Partnerships, during a Chatham County Board of Commissioners meeting in October. Our permits are already underway, and our plan is to start construction Q1 of 2023, of course pending approval by the county commission here, Taylor said. Taylor gave an update to commissioners as the company was looking to get its economic incentive package finalized with the county. An economic incentive proposals for Wolfspeed, which is building a plant at the Chatham-Siler City Advanced Manufacturing site, were also discussed. The commissioners unanimously approved both incentive packages. Both of these projects, with their combined $9 billion in capital investment and a total of 9,300 direct jobs, are set to help transform Chatham County from a bedroom community for Raleigh-Durham and Research Triangle Park into an economic powerhouse of its own. VinFast plans to invest $4 billion in Chatham County and employ 7,500 people by 2027, but the company wants to get moving quickly. Taylor said the company is still eyeing its ambitious timeline of starting production in Chatham by July 2024. Other nuggets of information discussed during the meeting shed some light on how the company plans to build this massive manufacturing facility in under 2 years. As part of the incentive agreement, the county will waive all permit fees for construction. Also, the county agreed to have a full-time building inspector at the site during construction. Wolfspeed projects investing $5 billion to develop its semiconductor materials facility, which will employ 1,800 people by 2030. The two mega projects have similar incentive packages from the county. The companies will receive cash payments for 20 years equal to a percentage of the actual increased property taxes paid. UNC System seeks to stall lawsuit. Students say they should be paid back for services not rendered in pandemic, written by Zach Ezone. The North Carolina State Supreme Court has granted a temporary stay in a case where University of North Carolina System students are trying to recover fees paid during the pandemic. The system had asked the state's highest court to block an appeals court ruling that allows two students to continue their lawsuit against the system. In October, a three-judge panel of the North Carolina Court of Appeals affirmed a Superior Court judge's decision last year to deny the UNC system's attempt to have a lawsuit filed by the students dismissed. That decision allowed the case, which revolves around fees the students paid for services they didn't receive when campuses were closed during the pandemic, to move forward at the trial court level. The Supreme Court issued the stay October 21 after the system asked the court to prevent the appeals court ruling from being enforced, temporarily pausing the trial court case from moving forward. This takes effect during the period the system has to file a petition for discretionary review asking the Supreme Court to take up the case, and then, if taken up by the High Court, while the case is under review. The system has until November 8 to file the for the discretionary review. UNC Chapel Hill student Landry Kuhn and NC State University student Joseph Lannon sued the system's Board of Governors last year for breach of contract after paying fees for certain items like health services, campus security, and parking permits that were unavailable after campuses shut down for the fall 2020 semester. The students are attempting to recover what they paid the university. This amounts to about $1,499 for Lannon and about $1,126 for Kuhn. Additionally, Lannon and Kuhn are requesting the complaint move forward as a class action suit to allow other students to recover damages from similar fees. The UNC system argued that the case should be dismissed on the grounds of sovereign immunity, which is a legal concept that helps protect governments from litigation. Superior Court Judge Edwin Wilson denied the system's breach of contract claim. The UNC system appealed the denial, leading to a recent written opinion from Court of Appeals Judge Chief Judge Donna Stroud. In more general terms, plaintiffs allege they paid for a service and then the other party to the alleged contract did not allow them to access that service, Stroud wrote. Taking the alleged facts as true, as we must at this stage, plaintiffs have properly alleged breach. And our next story is by Laura Brumette. The headline, Restaurant and Bustling Shopping Center Closes. A chain restaurant and sports bar has permanently closed one of its Triangle locations. Hickory Tavern, a Charlotte-based brand, closed its Morrisville location for good on October 21. The restaurant was located at 3201 Village Market Place in the bustling Park West Village shopping district, which sits along Northwest Cary Parkway at Chapel Hill Road, Highway 54. A sign posted to the restaurant's door announced its closure. "It is with heavy heart that we regret to inform you that effective 10/21/22, our Morrisville Hickory Tavern will be permanently closed. It has been an incredibly painstaking decision." Hickory Tavern, founded in 1997, served American fare and local brews in a casual dine-in setting. The brand now has 4 restaurants in the Greater Triangle area: Parkside Town Commons in Cary, Holly Springs, Carrboro, and Pinehurst. The brand first entered the Triangle market with the opening of its Carrboro restaurant in 2014. Its website shows 20 total locations across the Carolinas, with the majority in the Charlotte area. And now, in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Aviation page, written by Lauren Onasorge. "His focus now is to develop careers. Former Lenovo exec launches startup in Morrisville." Months after leaving Lenovo, a former executive has shifted his talents to entrepreneurship, launching a Morrisville company aimed at helping people build better careers. John Gordon, a philosophy major who became a technologist and then an entrepreneur, returned to the Triangle 2 years ago to launch a new business for Lenovo, its commercial Internet of Things business group. Gordon arrived with a hefty resume, having helped companies such as Bose, General Electric, and IBM launch their digital transformations. And he had offers to do it again post-Lenovo, he says. But while watching mentees really struggle, another idea started to develop, the basis for what would become the WOMI career planning platform, and that's spelled WHOMI. "They just couldn't figure out how they wanted to grow their career," he says of people he was mentoring. "Much like a company, when it starts to transition, it has to figure out what its goals are. People have to define goals." So instead of diving back into big tech, he took the chance on the idea that many of the same strategies he had been deploying to launch business transitions could be applied to workers looking for new opportunities. He founded WHOMI in Morrisville. WHOMI is a social network based around a career plan, he said. "Imagine if LinkedIn is where you showcase what you've done in your past. WHOMI is where you plan what you will do in the future," he says. Jurassic Capital funnels $3 million into senior care tech startup. A Durham software firm targeting the senior care industry has raised $3 million from a homegrown investor, Rubrik, spelled R-O-O-B-R-I-K, co-founded by Nate O'Keefe, announced a $3 million raise recently from Durham's Jurassic Capital, a startup investment firm out of serial entrepreneur Joe Colopy. O'Keefe co-founded Rubrik from his own experience navigating life with a preemie son, born at 26 weeks, now a thriving 11-year-old. His co-founder and aunt, Judy Conaway, had a similar experience trying to make decisions as a caretaker for her parents and in-laws, he says. O'Keefe recalls navigating the internet, trying to make these emotional decisions. "There's got to be a better way to use technology," he remembers thinking. So they formed a company in 2013. In teaming up with Jurassic, Rubrik has an opportunity to accelerate our scale, O'Keefe says. And finally, neutrality line with Red Hat gets blurred. 3 years after it bought out Red Hat, pledging to keep the wall of neutrality intact, could IBM be inching its way across the barrier? "It's very possible," says Logan Perk, an analyst with Edward Jones, speaking shortly after IBM executives announced the latest quarter. "What it comes down to is strategy, and Red Hat, which saw its revenue grow 18%, is central to IBM's cloud computing plan going forward. Altogether, IBM reported a 6.5% increase in revenue over last year, reporting $14.1 billion for its third quarter." And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Growing town looks to add more water. Capital project would cost $260 million, set Clayton up to expand. Clayton is one of the fastest growing towns in North Carolina, and it needs more water. That's why the town is embarking on its largest ever capital project, Sam's Branch Water Reclamation Facility, or SBWRF, Construction of the facility, located at 1422 North O'Neill Street near the Neuse River, and accompanying pipeline projects is expected to cost $260 million. Currently, the town's wastewater facility has capacity for 2.5 million gallons a day, as thousands of more people are expected to move to Johnston County towns in the coming years. Clayton needs more capacity. The plant was originally built in the 60s and expanded in the 90s, Clayton Town Manager Richard Coppola says. As we sit today, the majority of it, while still suiting a portion of our needs right now, is approaching the end of its useful life. Clayton, home to 28,300 people, has seen rapid growth over the last several years. SBWRF can produce up to 6 million gallons a day, but the town could pursue an expansion in the future that would increase capacity at the facility to 10 million gallons a day, Coppola says. The facility broke ground in February, and now Coppola says the town has hard bids in hand. The new facility won't just aid in a new home construction, but will also help company recruitment efforts, says Patrick Pierce, the town's economic development director. There's a lot of interest, and people see the Clayton market as a market they want to be in, Pierce says. I think this will provide that level of certainty as far as wastewater availability. North Carolina's newest rising tech hub might surprise you. Raleigh and Durham rank as some of the top technology hubs in the country. Now another city in eastern North Carolina is getting its moment in the spotlight. Greenville ranks as the number 73 best hub for tech in the country, according to a new report from the North Carolina Tech Association, which notes that the city's ranking was impressive considering how relatively small the area is. Considering that Greenville's 2021 adult population ranked the metro 258th out of all MSAs in the nation, it is quite impressive that the metro ranked as the 73rd best metro for tech, the report says. Greenville is home to 88,700 people, and Pitt County as a whole is home to 172,100 people, according to the U.S. Census data. Sanford builder eyes apartments. As thousands of jobs are expected to flood into Chatham County to the north, a developer is proposing to build a new apartment complex in Sanford to house them. The proposed 288-unit apartment complex would sit at the intersection of U.S. Highway 421 and Hawkins Avenue on the north side of town. The Sanford City Council held a public hearing on the apartment complex recently and referred the matter to the town planning board. The developer, Mark Lichkowski, is seeking a rezoning for 22.27 acres to develop the apartment complex, which is called Hawkins Village. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromette. New direction for North Hills on food. Freestanding building now planned for Innovation District. Kane Realty's efforts to shift away from North Hills' reputation as a fast, casual, and chain restaurant hub are continuing. A new freestanding food and beverage building is planned for the firm's North Hills Innovation District project, located between St. Albans Drive and Interstate 440. The single-tenant building will measure 6,000 square feet inside with over 15,000 square feet of outdoor seating, which has become essential for restaurants due to changing consumer demand in a post-pandemic world. Plans for the new building are replacing a concept Kane announced in January 2021. Big Branch Food Hall, a two-story, 11-tenant food hall spanning 20,000 square feet, is no longer part of the project, a spokesperson says. A tenant has not yet been secured, but Kane is in talks with potential users. We are creating a distinctive central gathering place in the heart of NHID, says Stacy Boucher, managing director of operations at Kane. Through our conversations with local food and beverage entrepreneurs, our vision has evolved to align with what they're most excited about, a well-designed single-tenant space that takes full advantage of NHID's unique natural setting and provides opportunities for meaningful indoor-outdoor connections. The new building will be situated between three previously announced structures in the Innovation District, a retail jewel box named the Pump House, Tower V, and Channel House. Construction on the space will begin in the summer of 2023 and is slated to complete in the summer of 2024. The food and beverage destination is designed to mimic its natural surroundings with its exterior facade featuring brick and corrugated metal with wood accents. Raleigh's Clearscapes is the architect on the project. The space will also feature original murals and signage, large windows and doors, and covered and uncovered patio seating. The building will back up to Big Branch Creek and two wooden pedestrian bridges will provide access for diners to parking and other areas of the district. Raleigh consulting firm leans into growth. Raleigh-based FMI Corporation, now in its 75th year of providing consulting and investment banking services to the built environment, has acquired Slate Partners, a boutique investment banking firm out of Denver. The move could help kickstart faster growth for the longtime company, CEO Chris Dahm says. It's really a win-win for both sides. They get a larger national footprint to help win more deals and larger transactions, he says. And we feel so positive about it because they really are best in class in what they do and how they do it. It strengthens our teams in the markets that we're already in. The financial terms of the deal were not disclosed, but Dahm says the negotiation took several things into account, including the firm's earnings. FMI is a $75 million firm pushing toward $100 million, Dahm says. All Slate employees will be retained, bringing FMI's total to 175. And finally, Raleigh Iron Works adds new tenants. The development team behind Raleigh Iron Works has announced Carrie's Andia's Ice Cream and locally based Yoba Studio as the project's newest tenants. Local firm Grub Ventures is partnering with Atlanta-based Jamestown to deliver the multi-phase development located along Atlantic Avenue at East Whitaker Mill Road. The two newly announced tenants are slated to open in 2023. Exact locations and square footage of their spaces were not disclosed. Previously announced tenants include Ponysaurus Brewing, East Cut Sandwich Bar, Fitness Concept FX, and Eatertainment Space Jaguar Bolera. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. South of downtown adds more interest. Dallas developer grabs nearly 36 acres of vacant land for $8.5 million. A Dallas developer bought 35.77 acres of vacant land on Hammond Center Drive for $8.5 million as interest in the nearby downtown South development ramps up. The site is just outside the Beltline along or between South Wilmington Street and Hammond Center Drive. Trammell Crow Residential plans to build a mixed-use project on the site. We are excited about pushing this new workforce housing development forward just south of downtown Raleigh, says Robbie Brooks, managing director of the Carolinas for Trammell Crow Residential. The site is an assemblage of three properties, 100, 101, and 120 Hammond Center Drive, which were rezoned in November 2021 under one address of 100 Knoll Street by the previous owners, Bell Investments Limited Partnership of Raleigh. Previous zoning was industrial use. Current zoning is commercial mixed use up to five stories with conditions. According to approved site plans filed with the City of Raleigh, there will be 207 one-bedroom apartments and 141 two-bedroom apartments across three three-story buildings. There will be 6,656 square feet of leasing and amenity space. 505 parking spaces are proposed for a surface parking lot. Trammell Crow is finalizing permits for the project. The company did not provide an estimated cost and construction timeline. The site is now undeveloped with a stream flowing into Walnut Creek. 15 acres are in designated floodplains. Therefore, only about 20 acres can be built on. The total assessed value is $3.1 million. Trammell Crow Residential is the multifamily development arm of Crow Holdings, a privately owned real estate investment and development firm. Developers continue spending spree. Loden Properties of Raleigh and North Pond Partners of Chicago have acquired the Carter Building at 14 Glenwood Avenue for $4.4 million, making this the team's fourth acquisition along that stretch of Glenwood Avenue across from the AC Hotel by Marriott. The companies also own 122 and 110 Glenwood and the collection of buildings between Jones and Hillsborough Streets that includes the Mojito Lounge, the Cupcake Shop Bakery, and Kelly Odom Flowers, bringing the total amount owned to 50,000 square feet of space. This is a unique opportunity to control a large contiguous block of retail and creative space in a thriving area of downtown Raleigh, Henry Ward of Loden says. While we see opportunities for adding some infill density in the future, we do not have immediate plans for significant redevelopment. The company say they've invested $15 million into the properties in 2022. And finally, New York developer, trophy asset for Raleigh. Two New York-based companies have partnered to buy a recently rezoned property. Developer Alchemy Property South and its capital partner, New Valley Realty, have acquired 303 South Dawson and 217 West Martin Streets for a combined $16 million. Alchemy Property South officials plan to develop luxury residential units on the vacant lot at 303 South Dawson Street, which totals less than an acre. There will be up to 450 apartments for rent and condominium units. Alchemy did not reveal how many stories the tower would be or the cost and timeline of the project. And now we turn to the On Healthcare Higher Education page written by Zach Ezone. Wake Tech seeks voter help to target jobs. Healthcare is main focus of schools' expansion plans. Wake Technical Community College is asking voters in November to approve a $353.2 million bond measure to fund capital projects throughout the county aimed at addressing local workforce needs. Healthcare is the main focus of the bond measure, with funds supporting a $105 million expansion that will allow the college to grow programs related to nursing and other areas, Wake Tech President Scott Rawl says. While the college will grow its enrollment, currently at about 70,000 students, through these projects, that's not the main goal, Rawl says. Focusing on programs that meet the county's existing and future workforce needs is the key driver of the expansions the college has identified. We go where the jobs are, Rawl says. The largest single project included in the measure, estimated at $105 million, is a new health sciences building at the college's Perry Health Sciences campus near Wake Med Raleigh. The facility would allow Wake Tech to expand existing health care programs, such as nursing, which currently includes about 300 students, and add about five new programs over the next 6 years. Expanding these programs will help address workforce challenges as the area's population continues to grow in size and increase in age, Rawl says. Last year, researchers at UNC Chapel Hill projected North Carolina will face a shortage of nearly 12,500 registered nurses and more than 5,000 licensed practical nurses by 2033. For about 20 years, the college has operated its Western Wake campus out of a shopping plaza on Kildare Road in Cary. Given the growth in the western part of the county and the limitations of leasing a storefront, Rawl says the time is right to build a permanent campus. If the bond is approved, the funds would cover the cost of two buildings for the new campus on a 34-acre site near U.S. Highway 1 and NC Highway 55 in Apex. One facility, estimated at $75.5 million, would house business and university transfer programs. The other facility, estimated at $54 million, would house life sciences and biotechnology programs reflective of the large biotech and pharma operations in the area. Fast-growing Raleigh MedTech names new CEO. Weeks after completing its eighth acquisition in about a year, a Raleigh-based service provider to medical technology companies has new leadership. Varonex named Tom Dalton its new CEO on October 20. David Dockhorn, who previously led the firm, is taking a newly created role as chief operating officer. The company was established by former employees of PRA Health Sciences, which last year was acquired by Icon PLC. Since launching in June 2021, Varonex, with the backing of Boston private equity firm Summit Partners, has completed numerous acquisitions as it builds its capabilities to work with medtech companies of all sizes at any stage of product development. Dalton was the chairman and CEO for National Dentex Labs, a full-service dental lab network, for 7 years. He has previous experience with large medical device and healthcare services organizations, such as Cardinal Health and Baxter. He also founded Devacor Medical Products, which employed more than 550 employees. And generated annual revenue of about $170 million at the time it was acquired by Leica Biosystems in 2014. And finally, firm sees promise in treatment. Less than a year after emerging from stealth mode, a Morrisville biopharma is looking toward a late-stage study for its treatment of major depressive disorder. Despite not hitting its primary endpoint, Arrivo BioVentures says the results of a recent Phase 2 study support the company moving its most advanced clinical program forward. Arrivo emerged with four drug candidates last year after initially launching in 2016 with $49 million from investors. While not all patients in the 319-person study experienced a statistically significant and clinically meaningful improvement in their depression symptoms, female participants did. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Five Life Sciences Trends to Watch for in 2023. Here's the good news first. When it comes to deal flow and M&A activity, life sciences companies have been on a tear in the past couple of years. Just this year alone, amongst the largest biotech deals, Pfizer Incorporated bought Biohaven Pharma for $12 billion. Bristol-Myers Squibb bought Turning Point for $4 billion. And GlaxoSmithKline bought Affinivax for $3.3 billion. The top 10 pharma and life sciences acquisitions totaled almost $30 billion just through June of this year. That has resulted in lifting various industries such as real estate, corporate finance, business, and professional service sectors, but most importantly, investors. While Wall Street suffers from one of the worst gyrations in recent years, thanks primarily to tech stocks and companies sensitive to interest rates, the pharma and life sciences sectors have broken the cycle. But moving into 2023, watch out for these five financial and corporate outlooks that may roil the industry in the next 12 to 24 months. Life sciences heavy markets such as the Bay Area, Boston, Philadelphia, Seattle, Denver, Washington, D.C., and the Triangle look to be most susceptible to these fluctuations. Deal flow. After a record-breaking 2021, deal flow and deal values are down in 2022. In a January to June six-month period in 2021 and 2022, deal flow value is down $61 billion this year, and the number of deals has fallen from 204 to 137, according to a PwC report. The second half of 2022 started off slow, but there is still no indication that it will worsen at the very end of the year. However, the drying up of capital markets has stagnated activity. Cash runway. Life sciences companies in the middle of their development pipelines have to work far well in advance to secure funding and move their compounds or drugs through the U.S. Food and Drug Administration process. While the R&D work may show promise without the money, these companies will open themselves up to be gobbled up by the likes of a Bristol-Myers, a GSK, or a Pfizer. Patent cliff. Big Pharma will soon be on a hunt to replenish some $200 billion of revenue from drugs that are coming off patents in the next 5 years. The downside is when Big Pharma buys the biotechs and companies with no commercial products, they will absorb the R&D into their infrastructure, leaving tons of labs, flex spaces, and warehouses empty. In areas where the ecosystem and the research are grounded, the impact may be a little less because smaller and newer pharmas, biotechs, will backfill the space if they are funded. R&D's next frontier, a digital world. Pharmas, contract research organizations, and healthcare services companies today are using technology in a far more advanced manner than they did before. A Deloitte report on the global outlook for pharma and life sciences companies notes that digitalization is one of the key factors that may lead to the cost of producing a drug dipping lower in the coming years. And finally, the COVID impact. Deloitte officials note remote monitoring and remote visits were top strategies for keeping clinical trials open during the pandemic. More clinical studies started across the board by the end of 2021 than ever before, with an increase of almost 18% from 2020 to 2021. Including more non-COVID trials. Oncology saw the biggest increase at almost 1,300 trial initiations in 2021, a 23% increase. 2 years after the pandemic started, more than 7,000 clinical trials had been initiated related to COVID-19 in the National Institutes of Health Clinical Trials Database, Deloitte's report noted. In the end, innovation, capital markets, and federal policy will play the lead role in recharging the life sciences and pharma sectors, but the question remains as to the eventual winners and losers from these trends. And also on the Viewpoint page, we have a column written by Alexandra Forder Sirota, who is the executive director of the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center. The headline, Jobless Insurance Worked, with Few Exceptions. The recent U.S. Census Bureau data released on poverty and income show the powerful effects of federal aid in reducing hardship across the country, including in North Carolina. By bolstering the federal side of the federal-state unemployment insurance system, members of Congress and President Joe Biden made sure that more workers had what they needed when they couldn't go to work during the pandemic, keeping them connected to the labor market and spending at businesses. The result was a jobs recovery that exceeded official projections early in the pandemic of how long it would take to bring unemployment down. Unemployment insurance alone kept 2.3 million people, including 525,000 children, from being pushed into poverty by the pandemic and the associated economic downturn from 2020 to 2021. Yet, North Carolina could have benefited even more if our state's unemployment insurance policies were in line with what is needed to stabilize households and local economies during hard times. In 2013, state policymakers made changes that reduced the effectiveness of the program. Today, North Carolina's unemployment insurance continues to provide too few dollars in wage replacement for too short a time for too few of the workers who have lost their jobs. Improvements to state unemployment insurance must include a specific focus on ensuring that workers who could most benefit are reached, along with adjusting the amount of wage replacement to better reflect prior earnings and extending the national standard of 26 weeks of access to benefits. If a growing share of the workforce is excluded from receiving this stabilizing support, the power of unemployment insurance will only continue to diminish. There are 212,000 workers who don't have immigration documents in the North Carolina workforce. The Century Foundation and the Immigration Research Initiative recently documented a movement in 12 states and a number of additional localities to reach these immigrant workers who otherwise would be ineligible for unemployment insurance. Nationally, employers of immigrants pay $1.3 billion in unemployment insurance taxes each year, but these workers were barred or are barred from accessing the program when they lose a job. In North Carolina, contributions via state unemployment insurance taxes from employers of immigrants who are undocumented total an estimated $23.5 million. Without aligning unemployment insurance to match the economy and workforce of today, the purpose of unemployment insurance will only erode with time. Providing people with wage replacement when they lost their jobs was just one of the ways that policymakers held extreme hardship and the associated cost to communities in check during the pandemic downturn. As the economy continues to provide fewer hours of work for more workers and increasingly relies on the labor of people who have immigrated to this country, it is time to design an unemployment insurance system that covers all workers and can stabilize the economy. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read through some of the big number items that run throughout the paper. The first one is 4.3 million. That's how many passengers have boarded planes bound for international destinations out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport this year through September, boosted by the return of the nonstops to Paris and London by Delta Airlines and American Airlines, respectively. The return of international flights to RDU means the reopening of the duty-free shop, which had been shuttered since 2020. And the next big number is 150. The number of rooms at a hotel to be built at the corner of Stantonsburg and Allen Roads in Greenville. And the next one is $157,000. That's how much Jay's Kitchen in Goldsboro was ordered to pay in back wages by the U.S. Department of Labor. It was found to be withholding tips and violating the Fair Labor Standards Act. And our next big number is sixth. That's where the Raleigh-Durham placed overall when the Urban Land Institute released the U.S. Real Estate Markets to Watch list in its 2023 Emerging Trends in Real Estate report, a drop from second last year. This year, the market also ranked second among markets for home building prospects. And our last big number is $15.23 million. That's how much Raleigh's Bryn Pharma reported raising in an October 11 securities filing as it advances its nasal spray treatment of anaphylaxis along the regulatory process. The company recently completed a study evaluating the nasal spray against existing treatments of anaphylaxis, such as EpiPen and generic epinephrine auto-injectors. And there are also a number of quotes in sections called He Said It and She Said It that run throughout the paper. And now we'll go through those. The first one is from entrepreneur Joe Colopy on why he and wife Carolyn donated $1.5 million to the North Carolina School of Science and Mathematics for a tech entrepreneurship program. I want to give more opportunities to the really sharp students there and at the same time find a long-term way to help what we're doing here in North Carolina. Next is Jim Seagrave, founder and CEO of Kinston-based Fly Exclusive, on why he pursued going public via a SPAC, Special Purpose Acquisition Company, compared to other options. If you do private equity, they're looking for a 3 to 5 year exit many times. I'm not really looking for an exit. I don't want to quit work. And in a She Said It section, it's Chef Ashley Christensen on the opening of her third fast casual location. BB's Crispy Chicken opened recently in Cary's Parkside Town Commons. We've been working hard to continuously highlight the overall greatness of the chicken sandwich, and we're excited to bring that to Cary. And next is John Priest, president of the Priest Company of Raleigh, after the firm spent $102.6 million to acquire Valentine Commons, a 928-bed student housing development next to NC State University's main campus. Priest plans to invest $10 million in upgrades. The NC State market has been one of the top-performing markets in our portfolio, and we believe the upside potential in VC is huge. And finally, a quote from Duke University Provost Sally Kornbluth on becoming the next president of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT. I've really loved my life and my roles at Duke. I've had lots of reasons to stay and really no reasons pushing me to leave, which tells you the strength of the pull I felt drew me to MIT. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice column. That focuses on Robert Van Gions. He fights for jobs to help Fayetteville grow. Robert Van Gions oversees economic development in a large military town. This question and answer interview column was written by Evan Hoopfer. Few communities have a workforce pipeline like Fayetteville. The city sits next to Fort Bragg, one of the largest military bases in the world. Every year, about 7,000 soldiers exit the base into civilian life, and most are looking for jobs. That creates a prime opportunity for Robert Van Gions and his staff at the Fayetteville-Cumberland County Economic Development Corporation. What we've seen is roughly a third of those people plan to go home to where they're originally from, but two-thirds are available or would be open to staying here in North Carolina if they had a good job, Van Gowen says. His office is working on attracting more of those exiting soldiers through a new program called the HR Talent Portal. The initiative would work with the soldier while he or she is still in the military to find them a place of employment for when their service ends. We can get employers connected with these soldiers prior to their final separation date to eliminate that stress on the soldier and their family, and also for our employers to have that high-quality talent as a pipeline to their operations, Van Gowen says. I think many folks want to hire veterans, but when push comes to shove, they need to fill seats, so we need to make it quick and easy for them to do that. Van Gowens leads economic development for Fayetteville, one of the largest cities in North Carolina, with a population of about 208,000. But unlike its large peers, the city has not experienced substantial growth lately. Fayetteville's population expanded by 4% between 2010 and 2020, according to U.S. Census figures. For reference, Wilmington's growth rate was about double that, and North Carolina as a whole grew by 9.5% during the same time frame. What have been the biggest changes in Fayetteville since you began your role in 2017? We are starting to get recognized as a second-tier market for development opportunities in that we fit a unique niche. I like to say that we're a light blue-collar community. If you need 27 PhDs, RTP does a great job of that, as do Raleigh and Durham. If you're going to get by on the physical strength of your labor, some of our rural communities have that. But if you need a place where people show up on time, are drug-free, and are able to operate equipment that are hundreds of millions of dollars each, those are our folks, highly skilled, technically competent, and a strong and dependable workforce, with a lot of that coming from Fort Bragg. What kinds of companies are you looking to bring to Fayetteville? We're seeing a lot of advanced manufacturing interest right now. These Tier 1 suppliers for some of these larger products announced in the state are considering our community. That is something we do very well here. Advanced manufacturing, robotics, 8 of the top 10 military contractors have operations here in Fayetteville as well. Are you close enough to future VinFast and Toyota sites to attract their Tier 1 suppliers? We are seeing interest from suppliers of some of these big projects, yes. How will Fayetteville be different in 10 years? We have been making a concerted effort to battle cyclical poverty here. 10 years from now, we look to have effectively broken that cycle. Through workforce development programs, training, seed capital funds, and entrepreneurship programs, we're looking to lift up our citizens who are most in need and get them into the labor market, get them employed, and give them opportunities for a better tomorrow. 10 years from now, we would really like to see ourselves as a center for applied innovation. Some of these great ideas that come up in places like RTP, we would be the place where those are put to active use. What industrial sites do you have open for companies? The last 5 years, we've seen a couple of million square feet of product coming out of the market. We've got two private sector spec buildings under construction right now, and we've got some sites as large as 700 acres available here. We are working, like many, to identify that next round of sites. We've gotten great support from Golden Leaf and our regional partnership and the state and locals to help get utilities extended to help move that forward, but we need more. Our state needs more. Are you looking for sites in the couple hundred acre range or a mega site? We would love to be able to if we can get to that size. The goal would be, can we get to the size we need with the infrastructure necessary? If we can't get a 1,000 acre site, we'll take 300 to 400 acre sites as well. That's an important goal for our state and something that the legislature and the governor are all focused on. We definitely think we can be part of that conversation. And along with this article, there's a closer look, title, President, Fayetteville-Cumberland County Economic Development Corporation, education, undergraduate degree, Catawba College, master's, University of Southern Mississippi, family, wife, Tara, daughters, Loretta and Cecilia, quote, you live by, there is a destiny which makes us brothers. None goes his way alone. All that we send into the lives of others comes back into our own. Edwin Markham. And in our last minutes, we'll read the ending of James Lee's column. He's a family business speaker, advisor, and author. The headline on his column, Don't Delay When Cracks Emerge in Business. And that ending of it kind of summarizes it. Putting off dealing with a difficult situation in your family business inevitably just makes it worse. Mold growing in your basement won't go away if you ignore it. Sometimes a sincere initiative and honest, non-judgmental communication is all it takes to straighten things out. Sometimes admitting there's a problem that has many owners is required to going toward meaningful change. The key action point usually lies somewhere between continuing to tolerate the intolerable and blowing up the business and the family. If something has gotten out of line in your family business, get busy straightening it out. And we'll end with our Business Pulse survey. The question this week, do you agree with the Carolina Panthers trading Christian McCaffrey? 72% say yes, team needs the draft picks. And 28% say no, team should have rebuilt around him. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.